12:10. This is WGN, and you are listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you for that. This is John Williams. We're here till 1. Then Anna DeVlantes has more helpful information for you. Happy National Nurses Day. It's National Nurses Week. I've been reminded by some of you who are the teachers or families of teachers out there that it's National Teachers Week as well. To all of you who are helping hold down the fort, thank you for that which you do. On my show earlier today, by the way, we were talking about a variety of things COVID-19 related, of course. And one of the issues was, where can you get tested for COVID-19 or the antibodies? And in fact, you can at numerous places. And I was wondering, who's doing it? How are you doing it? Where are you doing it? And how are you paying for it? The state of Illinois has a link on their website, and it'll take you directly to the COVID-19 testing place near you. And for some of you, the cost was nominal. For some of you, it cost a little bit more, but I didn't realize it was a click away. The link to that is on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. One other Facebook or link that I send a lot of people to is TerrySavage.com, who joins us again. You find Terry Savage nationally syndicated across the country, the financial columnist. She's in the Tribune on Mondays. And she joins us once again on WGN Radio. Hi, Terry. How are you?
Love to be with you, John.
I know you've got a lot to talk to us about, Terry, but I wanted to just bring you into a conversation I had with a listener just a short while ago. And she said that she is a W-2 employee who filed for unemployment benefits over a month ago and still has, and she got the card in the mail with no value. Every day she keeps checking it to see when they're going to put some money on her card. There's no money there. And she was assured by an expert that she did everything right, but the money just hasn't been put on there. Is she one of those people we have to just say, be patient, it'll eventually be there?
Guess what? First of all, she's not alone. I've gotten a number of posts at TerrySavage.com. I have asked Terry blog about that very same thing. One woman even was nice enough to scan this card, which came from KeyBank, and I went, Illinois Department of Employment Security has been so overwhelmed, as you can imagine, that not only with more and more people applying for traditional unemployment, questions about extending previous unemployment, and the whole new class of employees that are people seeking benefits that are self-employed.
Yeah.
So they've been overwhelmed. I have really great news. I know that you're taking an off day on Friday, and I'm hosting this show. And with much pleasure, I announce that Rebecca Sisco, who is the Strategic Director, Public Information Officer of the Illinois Department of Employment Security, is going to be my guest. And I am saving all those questions to ask her. So 48 hours from now,
wow,
on this very show, we will have the one person who can answer. And that question is near the top of my list. And by the way, I just swamped with questions about stimulus checks. But if you have a question about unemployment that you want me to ask her, I'm making a list, so I'll get everything in that 15 minutes, please post it at Ask Terry, and I will sort them all out and try and answer, get her to answer those questions for all of us.
Wow, that's the Ask Terry tab at TerrySavage.com.
Yep, and Friday, of course, Friday will be the day as we get the new unemployment numbers, so that's going to be probably pretty shocking news. We've been warned by a former Fed governor, that the numbers that we get for unemployment for this month are going to be frightening. So we'll have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, well, and a lot of information. Oh, that's such. Why don't you guys do it tomorrow? How about?
Kidding, no, we have to wait for the unemployment numbers, and I get to warm your chair so rarely that when I do, you're the pro at this. It takes all my adrenaline to do a show, but I'm going to do it Friday and again Monday while you take some time off.
Let's do this then. You've got a lot of helpful information about dealing with debt and bills that people have now. How should I? strategize all of that. I'll pause here. We'll come back with Terry Savage. Maybe you've got a question, too. I'll bet you do. 312-981-7200. It's 1218 on WGN. Terry Savage. TerrySavage.com is on a phone line. All of our lines are busy now, Terry, of course. But let's just talk about a couple of things real quick with you. You wrote on your site about dealing with the debt and bills people have. Give us some strategies to paying what, when, how.
Let's acknowledge this, that more people who have never thought they had a credit problem, never thought they had would have a financial problem, are suddenly faced with really, really tough choices. And people who always check their credit reports and check their credit scores and were very proud of that are suddenly faced with what will I pay, what won't I pay, and what will be the impact. So number one, a lot of America's in this together. Please don't stress out about your credit score right now. It's going to be like grading on a curve in high school. This test is a very, very hard one. And for sure, in the future, when people look at your credit scores and see what happened, they're going to understand, whether it's an employer, an insurance policy, or anything else. This is just a tough time. And the first biggest bill that everybody has is mortgages and rent. And so please don't look for evictions. That's just not happening now and for the next few months. If you actually have a federally backed or guaranteed mortgage, you can get all kinds of forbearance for up to a year. Lenders can't foreclose on your property. And even if you're not under a federal mortgage program, a lot of the lenders are offering a deal. Contact your mortgage servicer or lender. Contact your landlord. They also have federally financed mortgage and are restricted from evicting you. And so do the city and county have restrictions. So try and make those payments or at least make an arrangement. And I've never thought I'd give this advice. Don't worry about your credit card debt. Just don't worry about it. They know that people are in trouble, and they know that they might only get minimum payments from someone who paid in full. They might skip a month. If you do still have good credit, it's a little late for this, but you could try and find a zero balance card that you can transfer a balance to. Maybe that will cut the interest burden. I've also had a survey report that many card issuers are cutting your credit limits because they know that people are going to go turn to their cards just for food and so forth. So there's a starter. There's a column up talks about health insurance, student loans, car payments, and so forth. Those are the kinds of things you have to deal with, but don't panic is the bottom line.
I want to weave some of those in here as we work our way through, but let's pick up a couple of phone lines. Linda is a small business owner. Linda, you're on WGN with Terry Savage. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi, Terry. So I have a small business in Downers Grove. We've got 11 employees. Of course, I immediately applied through the PPP bank for the PPP loan through my bank. They were kind of slow to the game. And I have another bank that I applied to, and then also when PayPal came on 2 weeks later, I applied there. Now I got a reply from PayPal. I got a reply from my other bank, but my business bank, who I have all my business accounts with for 30 years, I have not gotten a reply. And when I go online, it says there's an error with my report. The other two places that I had applied said I've already been assigned an SBA number, which means probably my bank has the SBA number because they're the only one I haven't heard from, and yet I can't, I've been emailing, calling, and for the last week it's just been a roller coaster.
Give them some publicity. What bank is it that's got you tied up in knots like this?
TCF.
Okay.
And again, I've been with them 30 years.
Okay. So here's the question. First of all, there's a weird thing going on out there. Have your employees all applied for unemployment?
Not all of them, no. I of the 11, I think four or five have applied for unemployment.
Because a lot of employees are really upset when their boss gets a PPP loan and brings them back on payroll because they're getting more temporarily on unemployment with the additional $600 a week that runs through the end of July, July 25th.
Yeah,
so that's number one.
Too.
Okay, number two, the losses, the money's supposed to be primarily used for payroll or a mortgage. But if you don't meet the specifications when they audit you, it turns into a 1% loan to be paid back over a couple of years. I don't know what the nature of your business is, but when you get the loan, you have to think twice about it. This could be a 1% loan, 2-year loan, And if we get through this, even if you don't use it for a payroll, it might be the best and cheapest funding you could have to run your business through this time. I sure. don't understand. I'm not going to be everybody's advocate, but send me an email, terry@terrysavage.com. Tell me the bank, tell me the amount, tell me the problem, and I'll call their PR department and say, you got a bad thing on WGN radio today.
But is the problem, ladies, that, Linda, you want the loan and it's not coming through? You can't even get your bank to issue the money to you?
Yeah, I mean, I can't get a response.
They
have a thing on their website that says where your loan is, and it was going along fine. And last Friday, I got an email that said, everything's, going well, everything's fine, you should know something within 24 to 48 hours, and since then, it's been crickets. I have excellent credit. Again, I've been with them 30 years, and because my branch has closed down, again, I'm sort of at their will, and I have tried to call, but nobody has an answer.
Yeah, and then when the branch is where you know the people and they know you, you lose a lot when you lose those people. I'm putting you on hold, Linda. We're going to get your contact information. Terry said maybe she can help you after the show. But is it possible, too, Terry, that some of the banks, hasn't that money lapsed? Do the banks even have access to that money now?
No, that's not the issue. I was doing a program with the president of Wintrust, and he was explaining they've pushed over 11,000 loans through. Now, part of the deal is banks are fronting the money for the SBA. So some banks have decided they're going to wait for the SBA to give an approval on each and every loan, because if the SBA comes back to them down the road saying, hey, you didn't do this exactly right, you're on the hook for this loan to so-and-so's little business, the banks are getting a little worried about that. So there's a delay there while the banks sort of cover their own risk by dealing with the SBA and getting
right.
a sign-off, and I'll bet that's what's happened here.
Yeah, it sounds like it. We'll go to Sandy next. You're on WGN Radio with Terry Savage. Sandy, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Swell, how can we help you?
Hi, Terry. I left my job a few years ago, which I was at for like 38 years, and I did have a 401k there and was wondering if it's better to leave it there or to take it out and put it at the bank. Is it safer there or not?
It's not a question of safe, Sandy. When you're working and you're younger, the choices of investments inside 401ks are particularly designed for younger people who have real long-term perspectives, and they want some aggressive growth. And they know, the history says, there's never been a 20-year period where you lost money in a diversified stock portfolio, U.S. stocks with dividends reinvested. Now, let me ask you a quick question. Did you go back to work somewhere else, or did you retire, or what? So I'm trying to find out how old you are.
I'm not quite old enough to retire, so I am working someplace else and just doing a small amount into an IRA account now.
Okay. All right, but the smart thing to do when you leave the company, many companies have excellent choices, but if you want more conservative choices, which you might, given what's going on in the economy and given the fact that you're older than you were when you left a few years ago, you can roll it to a bank, but in a bank, you're either going to be at the mercy of the securities sales division, which charges you commissions to make recommendations for mutual funds, or you'll put it in a bank money market account and not earn very much. My preferred choice when leaving a company is to roll it over directly to Vanguard or Fidelity or T. Rowe Price, three of the largest, lowest cost mutual fund companies in the country. You'll save a fortune on fees and so forth. They'll handle the transfer directly from your former employer into your new IRA rollover. And when it gets rolled over, you can say for the moment, put it all in a money market fund. And then you can stop and think about, maybe I'll put 5% of it into the stock market and the Standard & Poor's 500 fund every month on the 9th of the month or whatever your birthday date is. And you can gradually get back to maybe, depending on your age, 40, 50% of your money back in the market, dribbling it in on a regular basis, no matter what the market's doing. But instead of leaving it in your old place, roll it over, but don't go into the clutches of an annuity salesperson. Don't think because you put it in the bank it's safer, because they have a brokerage division. They're charging you fees and commissions. Sorry, bank. That's the truth. Okay?
But is this true, though? Sandy, if your money's in a 401k, is it not in equities? Aren't you in mutual funds?
I just have 80% in guaranteed funds and 20% in bond.
Okay.
You've got a very conservative allocation there. So most 401k plans don't let you put that much in the most conservative things. So you probably don't have to do that, but most people think, oh, I've just got a target retirement date 2030 fund or something. Those are pretty risky, actually, and that's why I suggest rolling over to, say, a money market fund. But guaranteed funds with low rates, but guaranteed, those are okay inside your 401k. You've got a good company that gave you a great diversity of choices, and you picked the most conservative ones.
Sandy, thanks for the call. Good luck to you. I was just thinking, I presume you're not telling anybody to cash out mutual funds or funds in a 401k. You're just locking in your losses then, even though you hate to see it go down.
John, first rule of investing, never look back. I never would tell someone to cash in a 401k because that involves taxes. We're talking, number one, about a direct rollover to a place most company 401k plans give you like 8 choices, the growth fund, the aggressive right. growth fund, the international fund, the small cap fund, and a couple of target date funds. As people get older and have left their employment behind, they might become more conservative in their outlook. And that's why typically you roll directly to a place like Fidelity or Vanguard. You have a wide choice of funds. You have no tax implications of when you sell at a loss and move your money, as long as it's a direct rollover. So we don't worry about taxes inside a retirement plan. All that money's coming out as ordinary income anyway. We only worry about emotional decisions, which are like, oh my gosh, my mutual fund inside my 401k was worth $37,000. Now it's only worth $27,000. I don't want to lock in that loss. Don't look back. Look forward, plan ahead. That's the direction you're going.
TerrySavage.com. How about that? Okay, we're not done yet. More of your questions for Terry Savage. 312-981-7200. Terry Savage gives us one more segment of her time. She'll be hosting this show on Friday with a representative from the Illinois Department of Employment Security. Yeah, you've got questions about your unemployment compensation. Terry and the expert, the person from the office, will be doing the show on Friday. Right, Terry?
And I'm looking forward to that because it's tough to get questions answered when they're A, closed, and B, busy.
Let's pick up a couple more phone lines for Terry Savage then. Joe, how can we help you? You're on the air.
Oh, weird question. Hi, Terry. Hi, John.
Hi.
We got a call from our bank last night because we had applied for the PPP loan a while back for my wife's sole proprietorship. She's kind of a gig worker. And we were just waiting, and the bank called and said, we've been approved. The money will be in our bank account on Friday. My wife asked what the terms were, and the guy said, don't worry about it. It's a grant. And that's scary.
Well, sort of. You have to read the terms. The terms are that 75% of it has to go to keep people on the payroll. Is she the only one on the payroll?
Yes.
Okay, she gets to get paid. Does she have rent or a mortgage payment to make or utilities for her business, or do you run it out of the home?
We run it out of the home, but we claim our percentages
okay.
with the business.
So you can use that percentage to pay your utilities, and there will be an audit. For sure there'll be an audit if she got over $2 million. I'm guessing she didn't. But at some point, she'll have to certify and demonstrate how the money was spent to maintain her business. If it doesn't pass muster, and that means she's got to keep paying herself regularly and demonstrating that as a paycheck for the next 8 weeks at least. If not, it turns into not a grant that you keep, but a 1% loan that has to be repaid over 2 years. Either way, if it's going to keep her business going, she got lucky, and congratulations. And it's better than unemployment, which is still not quite available for Illinois self-employed people. So, hallelujah.
Joe, thanks for the call. Sean is next. You're on WGN. Hi, Sean.
Hi, John. I have an answer for your person that had done everything right and received the debit card from unemployment and
with
still
no
hadn't
money
gotten
on it.
Any
yeah.
money on it.
Yeah.
There was actually a glitch in the system that they fixed, but the problem is they don't know that you're one of the ones that had the glitch happen to. So there's a form when you go to IDES, Illinois Department of Employment Services, there's a form you fill out. It asks for your name and your employer, and then it asks what your issue is. And you have to notify them, and within 3 days, 3 to 4 days, they'll get back to you and fix it. I had the same thing. I waited 5 weeks with no hope. The other option they have is you can write out a piece of paper, and if they're near a unemployment office, there is a drop box that they can put the piece of paper in, and they are looking at those every day.
Wow, that's wonderful. I haven't been able to get an answer to that question. Thank you for doing that. I'm going to make sure we clarify that on Friday with Rebecca Sisco.
Okay, well, like I said, I waited 5 weeks and then filled out the form, and then I got an automated call saying that they knew about the glitch, but, you know, with, you know, 4 million or however many people are on unemployment, they don't know exactly who the glitch hit and who it did it.
How about that? Sean, that's good of you to call and be listening on Friday. Andy is next. You're on WGN with Terry Savage. Andy, how can we help you?
Hi, Terry and Jan.
Hey.
Terry, my mother is a senior citizen. She receives Social Security checks and Social Security disability checks. She still hasn't got her stimulus check. Isn't it due by now?
No. Join the crowd. They've made a first pass at people who received direct deposit refunds, and the IRS did, and sent out their checks. Then they got going through the tax returns and started sending out checks to taxpayers. And my understanding is that the middle of the month, this is now when they're just starting to send out these stimulus payments to Social Security, retirement, and disability payees, and that will come to the same place she gets her monthly benefit, but not necessarily at the monthly time. And don't be surprised if it takes another 3 or 4 weeks. The people really at the tail end of this dog are the people who get SSI benefits and receive them on cards. I don't believe, from what I've heard recently, that they've even started sending those out. And, of course, those are the people that need the money, presumably the most, because they're just living on these government SSI benefits. So, yes, don't worry if you haven't gotten yours. That's the first thing I should have said when I got on the air. Please don't write me if you haven't yet got your stimulus check. If you either get filed a tax return 2018 or 19 on Social Security receiving monthly benefits for retirement or disability, or have an SSI card, your check will come to you. But I bet the stragglers, I think the vast majority of Social Security will get it this month in May. I'm thinking the SSI cards payments may not come till the end of the month or maybe into next.
Diane, one more call here. You're on WGN with Terry Savage. Hi, Diane.
Hi, John. It's Sarah's mom, Diane.
Hi.
I was saying, Terry, I have the opposite. My mom passed away, and this week I received her stimulus check, and next to her name, you can see it says deceased. Do I just mark that box that's on the envelope and send it back?
I'm so glad you called. No, do not do that. Do not do that. You may deposit it. Now, up until Monday, when Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, off the cuff, said, no, if you're deceased, if someone's deceased, you have to return it. And the whole IRS went, huh? Because I had gotten guidance from them 3-4 weeks ago. You filed your return. That's what the law says. 2019, you signed a return. You're entitled to it. And many checks are indeed made out to a person they clearly know is deceased. So the current advice from my connection at the IRS is deposit the check. There is no procedure in the law for a clawback. If a legal case were made, it looks to some lawyers like the law says that if you file the return, you're entitled. It doesn't say you have to be alive to get it. So my advice to you is just deposit the check in the estate account or the account of the heirs. And I'm sure that's going to be a big blow up. And I'm reasonably sure, fingers crossed, that the Treasury Secretary just was talking off the cuff and didn't realize how many millions of these checks have been sent out, including, as you said, to someone who they know clearly because it's written on there, the estate of the deceased.
It's a stimulus check. I want people to spend that money. That's why they're getting it, for the living or the dead. Would you advise her to spend it or save it?
Yeah, you I do not believe they will ever be able to claw those back as a matter of practicality and as a matter of law. So you've got it deposited in the account, and the account of the heir, if there's an obvious heir, you could split it up if there were three kids that were heirs or whatever, deposit it. And I just, as a practical matter and as a legal matter, think it's a long shot that they're going to get around to clawing those back, despite the off-the-cuff remarks of the Treasury Secretary, which I have in front of me looking at him on the line now, who clearly didn't understand what a Pandora's box he was opening up, Pandora's coffin, I should say.
Well put. It's going to be a rock'em sock'em show on Friday, the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm taking the day off. I'm taking Monday off, too. I'm painting a deck. Anyway, Terry's going to do the show, and I think it's really going to be helpful and valuable to people. Terry, thanks for coming in on Friday.
Thank you, John, for letting me sit in your seat even temporarily. Big seat to fill, that's for sure.
Don't flatter me. You are the queen of money, and that's Terry Savage. Thank you. It's terrysavage.com to find out more and to get easy-to-reach links. All right, time for the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. CNA is being sued by a Las Vegas company in Chicago, saying CNA should be covering it for loss of business due to the pandemic. Just yesterday, the CEO of CNA said the Chicago-based insurer isn't required to cover those losses. Illinois could lose close to $560 million in gas tax revenue because of the pandemic. Those numbers come from the Illinois Economic Policy Institute. The state is depending on some of that money for its recently passed infrastructure plan. And Chicago tech and startup companies raised just $62 million in venture capital through the month of April. That's from Chicago Inno. That number's down from $218 million in March. I'm Steve Bertrand. That's the Wintrust Business Minute.
Back to a busy Orion Samuelson. What are you looking at over there, O?
Well, we're looking at a talk of frost later on this week in some of the crop-growing areas of the Midwest. As a matter of fact, it's influencing some of our grain prices today, along with some support from a flurry of commodity purchases by top soybean importer China. And then, despite all the doom and gloom with the economy, some positive news from Archer Daniels Midland today. Board of Directors has declared a cash dividend of 36 cents a share on the company's common stock, and the dividend is payable June 10th to shareholders of record on May 20th. But here's the interesting thing. This is ADM's 354th consecutive quarterly payment. That's a record of 88 years of uninterrupted dividends. And as of March 31st, 2020, there were 555,472,000 shares of ADM common stock outstanding. And then let me close on a bright note. Wisconsin-based Nuglaris Brewing Company has come up with a solution of sorts for all of the undrunk beer that's still sitting around since the gathering places for drinking beer were closed. The company plans to buy back all the half-empty kegs, or half-full, depending on your point of view, and replace them with full, fresh kegs. It's part of the brewery's Fresh is Best program, and Drew Cochran, a spokesman, said the half-empty kegs are probably going to have to get dumped anyway.
Oh, that's sad.
I know, but wait a minute. It will be used. He said, we actually have a relationship with a farmer who will take it out and have it applied on a field, so it'll end up being fertilizer and you'll grow drunk plants. So,
I was just going to say, what's he growing? I want that.
Okay. But that's your money on 720 WGN.
It's 1249. Robert Lawless is a professor of law. He is in the bankruptcy, consumer finance, and business sector. He's the guy that co-authored Empirical Methods of Law. It's a textbook you haven't read, but your law student has. He also contributes to the blog Credit Slips, a discussion on credit, finance, and bankruptcy. He's at the University of Illinois and joins us on WGN to talk about what this financial crush means to you down the road. Robert, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Bankruptcy, is that what we're talking about here? And Is that a good option? Is that inevitable for a lot of people?
So first of all, it depends a lot on everyone's individual situation. Bankruptcy is a legal procedure. It gets rid of past debt. It doesn't give you money that doesn't solve that problem. If you don't have money coming in, bankruptcy is not going to fix that. One of the things that I think is important is that people who are considering bankruptcy think about where they're at. If you're still going to continue piling up debts after you've filed bankruptcy, it's probably not a good option right now. You'll wait till things stabilize and you're going to be able to start climbing out of a hole. That's a good time to think about consulting a lawyer.
I want to make sure I understand correctly. So you're not recommending to people to contemplate or begin filing for bankruptcy now?
Well, again, it depends on everyone's individual situation. It depends on where you are. With all that's going on, I think there's a lot of economic uncertainty. Obviously, for a lot of people, it'd be probably not the best time to file bankruptcy, and we see that in the national statistics. Bankruptcies were down 46% in April, and I don't think that's because people are doing great financially. We know they're not. It's just not a great time for people to file if you don't know if you're not going to be working next month or the month after or even the month after that. Filing bankruptcy now isn't going to solve your problems.
Yeah, although I thought that at least that stems the tide. Will those people perhaps eventually file for bankruptcy? What's the purpose of bankruptcy then?
Well, so bankruptcy gets rid of your past debts, but if you're not working and you continue to pile up debts, those debts that are going to happen in the future are not going to be handled by your bankruptcy case. You're going to continue to be in a hole, and you're going to have used your ability to use bankruptcy to try to get out of that hole. So that's why most every good bankruptcy professional will tell you not to file bankruptcy if your financial problems are just going to continue after you file. In terms of what we expect in the future, I think most bankruptcy experts, and I agree with this, think there'll be an increase in consumer bankruptcy filings down the road. We know that people don't file bankruptcy the moment financial troubles hit. It usually takes a couple years before it gets to the point where bankruptcy is an option that somebody should consider. So I think you're going to start seeing an increase in consumer bankruptcy filings in the coming months, maybe 6 months, maybe even a year or more before we start seeing waves of those.
Are you worried about people potentially abusing that? That is, knowing full well the end is near, running up bills or spending in a way now that they would not have otherwise?
Statistically, there's just not a lot of that in the bankruptcy system. There are about 750,000 cases each year, so that's a lot of cases. There are a few of those that have abuse in them. Sure, when you have that many cases, there's always going to be some people who are abusing the system, but the vast, vast majority of people filing bankruptcy, we just don't see that in their court records and the research that we do down at the University of Illinois, where we talk to people who file bankruptcy. They're there because something unexpected has happened in their lives, like what we're going through right now.
Yeah. Are there certain kinds of businesses that are most vulnerable right now as a result of this, would you say? I mean, we know restaurants are suffering, et cetera. Could you just talk about maybe by category who's most vulnerable and might yet be declaring bankruptcy?
So we were talking about consumers before, and I have to start talking about commercial bankruptcies. Those are actually up in April. Those are rising. Certainly areas that are we're seeing commercial entities file bankruptcy are areas that you've already mentioned. Retail is obviously one. We're seeing financial distress in the travel sectors, tourism, those sorts of sectors. We're already seeing companies filing bankruptcy.
Now, let's go back to the individuals for a moment. Are there strategies that people should contemplate to protect their assets if they declare bankruptcy? Can they park things in a certain way or position it so that they'll be able to retain as much of their stuff after they declare bankruptcy?
Yes, and that's where I think a good bankruptcy lawyer can come into play. There are limits to those strategies. Sometimes they are, if somebody gets too overeager, they do too much, that they could get burned. But generally speaking, yeah, that's something that people can do.
Do so legally. For instance, I'm just thinking out of the box here. Gift or transfer assets to somebody else.
Well, that strategy won't work. So the bankruptcy will take back any attempts to try to get rid of assets or transfers, to send it to a friend. That won't work. But there are things like retirement assets are protected in bankruptcy. So somebody can transfer assets into retirement. But again, if you do too much of that, then courts will come in and say you've gone too far. Now, you know, where exactly the line is kind of fuzzy between, you know, kind of like the tax law, right?
Yeah, well.
You go too far, you get burned. But, you know, where that line exactly gets drawn is pretty fuzzy. But again, that's why, you know, people should work with a bankruptcy lawyer. I generally think that although it can be expensive, working with a lawyer is the right way to go if you're going to be filing bankruptcy. And just one other thing I should say, just to be clear, 95% of the people who file bankruptcy have no assets to protect. People who file bankruptcy are in dire financial straits. So the strategies we're talking about are small minority of people who may take advantage of them.
And one last thing, is my home protected?
That varies. Generally, your home equity is what gets protected. Of course, you've made a deal with the bank that if you don't pay the mortgage, they can take the home, and bankruptcy doesn't change that deal. I actually just ran the statistic the other day. The average person filing bankruptcy only has $8,000 in home equity, and that's well below the threshold for every state in the country that gets protected.
Robert Lawless is a professor of law, and he deals with bankruptcies, consumer credits, things like that at the University of Illinois. Okay, it sounds like this isn't the last time you and I are going to talk on this show. We appreciate your help and expertise. Thank you, Robert.
All right, thank you.
Have a good day.